I'm Shalina Tobin, aka Posh Nosh Gal, and I'm with the brilliant chef Sean Rankin. Hailing from County Durham in the north of England, Sean has become a household name across the country with his regular TV appearances, numerous cookbooks, and his fabulous restaurants. He's worked in famous kitchens as far afield as Australia and the United States before settling in his adopted home of Jersey, where he opened the famous Orma restaurant. He now splits his time between family in Jersey, Orma Mayfair in London, and his new restaurant at Grantley Hall in Yorkshire. Welcome, Sean Rankin. How are you?
I'm good under the circumstances. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. So where is home for you right now?
I just got back to Jersey about a week and a bit ago. I was in the UK closing down the restaurant at Grantley Hall for a while and then self-isolating as one does nowadays. And then made it back to be with the children for a few weeks until we figure out what the opening date's going to be.
Right. And I mean, you're used to spreading yourself so thin between family in Jersey and your London restaurant and your Yorkshire restaurant. I mean, you must have a lot of free time at the moment. I know you just said that you went back to Jersey, but what have you been doing?
Well, I mean, when we first closed, it's like a holiday, to be honest. You'd never get, chefs don't get this amount of time off. So first of all, you know, you're obviously wanting to continuously work. So you start baking, you start making marmalades, you start doing all the things that you would normally do, but in a domestic environment. Once that's out of your system, then you tend to drink more wine than you normally should. it goes on by week. I think it's you go through different stages of overindulging, working, being healthy, and then the cycle turns around again. But we've been keeping ourselves busy as much as we can. We're doing. Obviously, things are going to change when the restaurant opens. So we've been doing a lot of work into thinking how that will change and, what are the steps that we need to put into place for that to happen.
Right. And are you creating new recipes? I mean, what does that involve? What are the changes?
We always work by seasonality anyway. So, I'm working with the gardeners at Grantley Hall, making sure that they're still doing their job. They're still sowing everything we need, planting everything we need, looking after everything we need. So we're continuously working on, are we going to be operational in July? Hopefully, yes. So we're gearing ourselves up to, what's in season in July. So working on new recipes, new ideas, new dishes, just generally things we normally would do, but we're far away from each other.
Yeah, so I mean, you're talking about Grantley Hall, I'm assuming, in terms of opening. How do you think the Mayfair restaurant is going to come out of this?
Well, hopefully, Orma Mayfair should come out, just as well as everybody else, I think. London is a difficult proposition. It's a very busy city. Whereas Grantley Hall is in the middle of the Yorkshire Dales, and one thing that has is a lot of space, and maybe people are going to be looking for a lot of space, when all of this doesn't end, when lockdown starts to become a little bit more understanding than what it is. We'll just have to wait and see. The government guidelines are what they are, and we just have to respect them and respect our clients and respect the health and safety for our staff also as well, and work along with everybody to try and offer a product that we used to offer 4 months ago. Sounds like a lifetime ago.
Yeah, exactly. But that sounds like a really good idea, actually, because I know a lot of people are cancelling their travel plans or have cancelled their travel plans. So going up to Yorkshire for a little bit is probably a really nice idea. And like you said, there's a lot of space up there.
Yes, correct. Lucky enough, Grantley Hall has it's a very large property, and you know, there's lots of space. People can hide away. They can social distance themselves as much as they want to. I think that's a good thing. I mean, people are going to want to get out. They are going to want to do something a little bit different than what they have been doing especially for the last 3 months. And they're going to embrace it with open arms, I think. But we just need to put the steps in place to make sure that they are comfortable, clients are comfortable, we're comfortable. And if that means, you know, losing a few tables in different restaurants, then so be it.
And how does it work with social distancing in your kitchens? Because that must be a difficult thing to have.
Well, yeah. That's for us still to trial and test, really. I mean, obviously, PPE is going to come in. We are fully prepared, along the lines of, making sure that everyone is fit and healthy as much as possible. We're understanding where our staff are, temperature control. Do they have any symptoms, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know, we just have to go through the guidelines, and nobody really knows exactly, you know, what it's going to be like. We can only just guess.
Yeah. Well, I hope it all works out and you figure out a way. I'm based in London, so I really hope to be visiting Orma Mayfair again soon. I absolutely loved it. I visited a few months ago, and it's probably one of my favourite restaurants in London.
That's good to know. I'm glad.
Highly recommend it to everyone watching. Orma Mayfair in London is superb. I've always been intrigued by the name Orma. What does it mean?
Well, Orma is a prized shellfish. So it's the Southern Hemisphere, you'd probably know it as abalone.
Yes.
So in the Channel Islands, it's called an actual Orma. And it's a half shell with the meat underneath. The actual body of the creature sits under the shell. And the Jersey is the most northern place in the hemisphere where you can collate ormas. It's a very protected shellfish. It's renowned as the king of all shellfish. A bit like the abalone is in the southern hemisphere and in the Australian waters and such like, and it's very prized. You can only collate it in certain times of the year between October and April, and you can only do it by foraging, as in you can only hand pick it. You can't actually harvest it. So from that, I thought when I opened Orma in Jersey, the restaurant in Jersey, I was looking for a name and thinking, you know, what is the most prolific, apart from obviously the Jersey Royal, and you know, what stands out? And so we came across the name of Orma, and being on an island, we use a lot of shellfish and fish also, so it seemed to work really well for the brand and for the restaurant.
Right, so does all your produce come from Jersey?
When I was in here, when I worked in Jersey, when my restaurant was here, everything was from Jersey. There was 95% of everything that came from Jersey, and in season, everything really. Yeah, absolutely. In Orma Mayfair, we still use as much as we possibly can. The Jersey produce, Jersey rolls, asparagus, strawberries, the dairy, the cream we use obviously to make the butter. So we still, we still engage on that process absolutely as much as we possibly can.
And you're an ambassador for Jersey Royals. What does that involve?
It was working together with the Jersey Royal Company itself, just making sure that the awareness was around the Jersey Royal and the backbreaking work that went into that. The fluke itself, the seedling is still hand planted every single year, and majority of the potato is still hand harvested. So there's a lot of backbreaking work. There's nothing like it. It's a fabulous little golden potato, which has a really nice flavour of nutmeg and seaweed. And it's a fabulous product. So, for me, from the island's point of view, just trying to showcase, what the island's worth is what it's all about.
Right. And just talking about you for a moment, did you always want to be a chef?
As long as I can remember, yeah. My mum was a great, great cook. She loved to bake. And, you know, I'd work with her. Well, not work with her. Sounds like she put me to work. sorry. Just one second. That's what happens when you're at home. my mum, on rainy days, I used to help her with Sunday lunch, and I'd make apple pies with her. And, you know, sort of like stews, casseroles, ham hock soups, that kind of stuff. So she always got me working. So I always enjoyed it, always liked it. And, you know, going through school, there was an element of food. I did sort of catering in my youth, and it seemed like the right thing to do in those days. And, you know, I'm not young anymore, so... there wasn't much to choose from.
So your mum is kind of like the backbone of how you became a chef. So which industry figure would you say you most admire?
There's been lots over the years, but I happened to spend some time with Thomas Keller a couple of years ago. We launched a product in the Dominican Republic for Davidoff, a cigar. A chef's edition cigar, and we all put together, you know, the ingredients, what we thought would the cigar want. So I spent some time with him and understanding him as a chef.
Did you visit the French Laundry?
Not yet. No, it's still on my to-do list. I've been too busy.
Well, several times.
Yeah, absolutely, and it's probably worth its salt. I've been a fan of Thomas Keller for years and years and years. You know, his book was a revelation, The French Laundry, and you know, what a great success. And you know, for someone to look up to, that is a person I would look up to as a chef, as a mentor, and you know, is a really, really nice guy.
Amazing, and you also work with Charlie Trotter in Chicago.
Correct. Yeah, that was a long time ago. Well, I'm 48 now, and so it probably was about 20 odd years ago. You know, I went there and spent a year in Charlie Trotter's, which is, you know, God bless him. You know, he's no longer with us. And again, you know, what a great guy. We're an ambassador for the industry. Loved it. Yeah, it took a lot of different ways then. I found a lot of produce, you know, 20 years ago that weren't here. And you know, this is why I started, you know, playing around with sort of not the American cuisine, but a different style of cuisine. And that's how it all started, really, I think.
Well, Grantley Hall, let's talk about that for a second. That's your latest project. How did that come about?
I was lucky enough to have a conversation with Andrew McPherson, who's the general manager. And at that time, it was still a project. You know, sort of a year and a half to go before it opened. And he was looking for somebody to understand the F&B facility, the concepts and the design of the kitchens. And I've designed my products before, my restaurants and my kitchens, you know, and the F&B areas. It's really important to get the ergonomics right and make sure that, especially in a place like that, that everything works and connects properly. So I went in there and started consulting and designing all the kitchens. There's six kitchens, designing all the restaurants, the F&B areas. Yeah. And then started putting the products together, as in the concepts, what they are, working with a team. And then that's how it all started. And then, close to the end of the project, they asked me if I'd like to take over the fine dining restaurant. We just said, yeah, absolutely, love to. So and that's how the relationship started, and that's where we are now. And it's a fabulous place. It's a great product. It's a shame we've only been open 10 months. We're all eager to get back to it, really.
Absolutely. I mean, you were very much involved in that construction and design process. How does it differ being part of such a bigger operation than an individual restaurant?
I think it's you know, when you're working by yourself, then you know you've only got one or two people to you know, work alongside with. But then, you know, when you're working on a bigger project, there's a lot more people involved, so there's a lot more ideas involved, And the thing that I've found as the best value is really just to sit back and listen to everybody else, what they have to say, because somewhere down the line, you know, somebody has a better, a better idea than what you do. So, and if they don't, then it's time for you to give your ideas over. And you learn a lot more because there's a lot more wisdom around the table. So it's been a real pleasure in doing Grantley Hall.
And I mean, it's got its own beehives as well. Was that your idea?
Yes, absolutely. It's still in progress, so we are getting there slowly and surely. But it was all about sort of self-pollination and understanding, you know, what Yorkshire is and what Grantley Hall is, if we can make sure that, you know, for breakfast you've got honey and honeycomb, you know, from our beehives, and a cocktail in the bar is from our beehives, and we're making sort of we're making ice cream, or we're making a produce, you know, from that certain thing, then we know the bees have touched and cross-pollinated, majority of the fruits and vegetables around, you know, the gardens and the hall. It just gives a sense of value. And, you know, we're very, very into sustainability. Obviously, you know, we want to try and make sure that we're buying 90% of our produce, you know, or foraging within a 30-mile radius. And so it's really important for us that we get back to nature and understand it.
Amazing. And what other produce do you grow there?
Kitchen garden is full. We dug it out on year one. So this year, working with the gardeners, we've learned by our mistakes from last year what didn't grow, what the soil was like, the fertilization. And this year we've planned quite a considerable amount, but we haven't. What we failed to do last year was to understand what we needed for the menus. So instead of growing a lot of variety, we've actually slimmed it down into just growing what the needs are, you know, for the menus. And you can only do that by experience and only going through the first year. So everything from, you know, kohlrabi, celeriacs, blackcurrants, blackberries, strawberries, normal baby carrots, baby leeks, beetroots, you know, it's all there. It is all there. And the beautiful thing is as well, around the area, within the hall, we've got a great area to forage. We've got birch trees, you know, for sap. We've got wild fungi. We've got wild garlic. We've got there's a huge amount on our doorstep which we're using.
Sounds fantastic. And you've also set up a hospitality academy. What inspired you to do that?
Yes. Yeah, so the academy is set up at Grantley Hall. And again, we're only very young at the moment, so that is in the pipeline. And I could probably give you more information, in a few months' time. But it's exciting. We want to obviously train train our own, and also go through a process where we're continuously training, our staff all of the time in their needs, so they can progress through Grantley Hall in lots of different disciplines.
And how important is it to you to nurture young talent?
Very much, absolutely. I mean, everyone says it. I mean, gone are the days of the apprentice scheme, and I think we're all feeling that now. I certainly started off as an apprentice, and a lot of people did, and didn't do any harm, I don't think, to me. We've lost a huge amount of talent. The industry's lost a huge amount of talent for lots of different reasons. We just have to hold on to it now. We've got the people that are interested, we've got to look after them. The industry's changed. We know it's changed. We're adapting. We're working harder to give better hours, better conditions, beautiful kitchens, beautiful working areas. And if you don't, do that, then, we're going to have no one to do this in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. So what advice would you give to a young person wanting to be a chef?
It's a great industry to be in. It's a great profession to be in. It's very professional. You'll get a lot out of it. It is hard work. It's not as hard work as what it used to be, which is a great thing. It's more fairer now. The wages are good. And you know, it's a passion. So, you know, it's life. It becomes your life and it becomes your passion. Yeah. And if that's installed in you, then you should really exercise it, because, you know, you will get a lot out of it. And, you know, there's many chefs that will say the same thing. I'm sure there is. But, you know, it's a very rewarding career to be in, you know. And, you know, that's what we do it for, because we like to make people happy.
Yeah. So what's the best advice that you've ever received yourself?
I can't remember. I think it was, you know, somewhere along the lines of, you know, there is light at the end of the tunnel. And I think I was really young and I was in London, and I was on an apprenticeship in London, and I was struggling. And I think one of the senior sous chefs who said, listen, you know, son, you know, don't give up. There's light at the end of the tunnel. It does get better. And yeah. I think that's probably, you know, one of the bits that sticks in your mind and, you know, makes you carry on.
And was that at the Mayfair Hotel? Because you did an apprenticeship there, didn't you?
Yes, I did. Yeah, I did. Wow, that's a long time ago. And that was at the Mayfair Hotel. Yeah. And that was when it was old sort of school kitchens. Yeah. You know, lots in the brigade, big hierarchy. And, you know, it was very classic, very, very classic in the way of cooking, very classic in the way of discipline, a lot of French chefs there. It was a very different world than what it is now.
Yeah. And you went on to, you moved to France after that.
I did. I did some stages in France. I was lucky enough to go to Lyon de Lyon, and some French places, around those areas. So it was, I was lucky, to get my, you know, feet in the ground. And, even though I couldn't understand the language very much at that point.
You must have picked up a little bit of French at the Mayfair.
Yes, a little bit. Yeah. I was just saying I was only about 17, so I wasn't a 17-year-old nervous northern lad.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure your French is amazing now. You stayed in France, so you probably picked up quite a bit. And so moving on a little bit, in 2017, you opened the doors of your kitchens to the contestants of MasterChef. How stressful was that?
Correct. It was great, to be honest. From our point of view, you know, we weren't stressed. The only stressful, you know, side was it that we had a restaurant full of diners that, were going to be critiqued. We were there to nurture them and look after them. And they were, I mean, you know, obviously the contestants were really stressed because they were in an environment that they weren't used to. So it was more about holding them together than rather than holding us together. It was more sort of trying to get them through it. You know what I mean? Because the service just seemed like for ages, you know, it was a lunch service, and it seemed to go on for, you know, 3-4 hours, where normally a lunch service is over and done with an hour and a half, 2 hours. It was like the never ending service, but it was great fun. You know, the contestants loved it, and you know we had a great time with MasterChef, and we always do. That, you know, they're great to work with.
And did you worry at all about compromising the quality of your food that you were serving to the guests?
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, that's why, you know, I was on hand there, you know, to try and steer them in the right direction. Yes, you know, there's some things that went out that you're thinking, ooh, help. But there's not really a great deal you can do at that time. Sorry?
No backups?
Not really, no. Not when you're cooking to order. It's not, no, there's nothing to preheat.
Yeah. So I read somewhere that you're interested in marine biology. How did that come about?
I used to dive a lot, more so years ago than I have done now. But I used to dive a lot in the shores of Jersey because it's fabulous for diving, and just wildlife in general and marine life. I really have a passion for it. So the conservation side is important to me. Looking after it is important to me. it's something that I'd probably want to, you know, pursue, you know, maybe in a few years' time, as I get older, maybe retire. I don't think so.
Well, diving must be beautiful in Jersey.
Sorry?
Diving must be beautiful in Jersey.
Yes, very much so. It's a great place to dive. The waters are very clear sometimes, you know, with sort of like good 9 to 12 meter visibility, which is exceptional for, you know, for the UK and the islands itself. We have a big tidal movement in Jersey as well, so we have our own oyster beds all the way out, and it's a great place. The seas are clear, the shellfish are fabulous, and it just needs looking after, and, you know, we all need to do our bit.
Yeah. Well, now's probably quite a nice time to go diving, seeing as you've got the time.
Yeah. I'm homeschooling at the moment, so there's zero time.
Oh, so there isn't much time. Oh, my gosh. Are you teaching them cooking as well?
I'm starting this week to do a cookery lesson, maybe twice a week. So, yeah, so get their hands dirty a little bit, because they've not really wanted to do anything,
right?
You know, in that direction yet. So yeah, I'm sure they'll love it.
So you're a great supporter of the Teenage Cancer Trust. Why is that important to you?
Well, yeah, very much so. Well, I'm a father. Obviously, that's a main thing. We all support the NHS more than ever now, and I just thought it was a really creditable. You know, society, you know, to be involved in as in a charity wise, and they are very proactive. They're really good, and you know, the what they do on the wards is pretty phenomenal. And it's birth, it's life, it's children. So, yeah. You know, anything to do with children, you know, absolutely, I support it. You know, all day long, it's a great charity to be involved in.
Yeah, I mean, I've been to a number of their fundraising events, and the WHO are great supporters as well. Have you ever cooked for them?
Yeah. Not yet, no. Hopefully one day. Yeah, so they've got some great great stars, you know, in their lineup. They support the trust, which is, you know, is phenomenal. I mean, I've never seen such a lineup sometimes.
I know, it's absolutely phenomenal. And so let's move on to Michelin stars. I mean, you've got Michelin credentials in buckets. Are you aiming for more?
I'd like to think that Grantley Hall can achieve that standard, very much so. We set a stall out to do that. I think it warrants it. And this, you know, the owner, you know, and she's put in a lovely lady, Mrs. Sykes, and she's put in a huge amount of her own investment into this, you know, with not wanting anything in return. And as a legacy for her and her family, I think, you know, we have to, you know, put this place on the map. Yeah. And by putting this place on the map, I don't just mean, you know, just give it some bells and some whistles. You know, it attracts, you know, Michelin stars, what they are, they attract the traveler, they attract the gourmand, the gourmet. You know, the people that really like to travel the world and find new and exciting restaurants, places to dine, places to socialize, places to enjoy. And it's not just about, you know, the food, it's about the whole emporium as well. And I think that's why it's important for us to try and achieve, you know, a Michelin status there. Because of everything that surrounds it. It's not just a, you know, it's not a selfish notion here. It's actually, you know, for all of the right reasons, really. That's why we're working hard towards it.
Yeah. And how hard is it to retain a Michelin star? Because you've kept yours for years.
It's very daunting. It's hard to get it, and, you know, and hard to keep it. Like every chef, I'm sure, you know, the date comes around at the end of September and everyone has sleepless nights. You just have to keep consistent. Believe in what you do. You don't have to follow a path. You don't have to follow anybody else. You just choose to cook how you want to cook. And if that level is accomplished and Michelin see that, you know, you've got everything that's needed, consistency, textures, flavors, combinations, in season, it's working right. Then, you know, that's what you can be happy with. You know what I mean? That's all you can be happy with. And, yeah, it is hard to keep it, but I think if you keep consistent and you believe in it, then I'm sure it'll be okay. As I say that,
you definitely know how to do that because you've done so well at keeping your stars. And so tell me something about yourself that I couldn't possibly know.
Oh, God. Okay, so I'm a match fisherman, so which means that I fish in matches around the world. So for those people that fish and are match fishermen, they understand it. For those people that don't, they'll just think, what on earth is he talking about?
So the people who don't know, can you tell us briefly, what is it?
Well, what happens is twice a year, once is the World Championships and once is the European Championships. You have teams in the country, so you've got England, Scottish, Wales, I fish for the Channel Islands, Portugal, Spain, Hungary, some of the best teams in the world, Italy, and they all go away and compete at a venue once a year. This year was supposed to be Italy, but it's been cancelled, obviously.
Right.
And it's a competition. It lasts 7 days. You practice for five, and then the competition is on the Saturday and Sunday. And the biggest weight wins, and the team. Normally, it's either England, France, Belgium, Italy, or Hungary that normally are the winners. So we try and compete as best as we can. It's good fun. It gives me a break, and I like it.
And is it the winner is basically to win, you have to catch the most amount of fish? Is that right?
Yeah, correct. Well, it's the weight. It's the actual weight of the net. Yeah. So, some tactics. You know, some teams might be looking to catch a lot of small fish, and then some fish. Some teams might be like looking to catch maybe three or four big fish. So right. It's all about tactics and about bait and about ground bait and about. If you're not into it, you won't be into it. You'll find it boring. Yeah, for us fishermen, we like
it. Fascinating. It sounds absolutely brilliant. So, Sean, tell us what's next for you. Are you thinking of coming up with, when we all open again and we're back to business, would you be thinking of more restaurants? Have you got any more TV coming up or more books? Tell us what's next.
I think, the idea is to concentrate really now heavily on Grantley Hall. Yeah. And what we have. And then... TV is always a great one because it showcases your product, and that's where it's all about. If you can get in front of an audience of 3 or 4 million people and talk about your restaurant and about your product, then hopefully people will come and hopefully enjoy your restaurant. And that's what it is. It's a marketing tool. I like doing TV. I've always liked doing TV. I love it. I like the culture of it. It's really good fun. Get some time. I should be doing a book right now, but homeschooling is not allowing that at the moment. So I'm probably more focused back at work than I am now.
Yeah. Well, good luck with everything. And thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. It was a pleasure. Take care.
So guys, you can follow, you can keep up to date with what Sean's up to on his Instagram handle, which is Sean Rankin, and I'm at Posh Nosh Gal.